Hi, today is March 20th, 2022. I'm Todd Gossard, my good friend John Westfall, who is back from his super secret mission.
Yep.
This is Mobius Podcast 398. I want to thank Paul Lawler for sitting in while John was away on his super secret mission. And last week, Paul and I actually went through the Apple announcements, but I did want to hear John's take, so we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. After we get to two things that I found interesting, because I was, you know, I have Google Maps on all the time, even if I know where I'm going, just so it can route me around, you know, traffic accidents and traffic slowdown and so forth. And I used it yesterday on Saturday, March 19th, and no problems. But according to ZDNet article, Google Maps was down for several hours. Maybe it was regional. I don't know.
Yeah, this is one of those wonderful things now about the distributed cloud. You know, the idea that these outages really annoy a good chunk of people, but everyone else just thinks nothing is going wrong. And unless, you know, I guess that's a sign of limiting the ability of your engineers to screw things up too severely if they can only take down certain regions of things with misconfigurations. It is a weird world, and it's slightly less useful than we used to have. You know, we used to have Down Detector and websites like that were easy to tell if there was something that was down. You go on Twitter, you could search it, and now you're going to get a very confusing picture because you'll search, you know, Google Maps down, and you'll get 20 people saying Google Maps is down and 40 people saying it's up.
Yeah.
And, you know, do you conclude that you're the issue, or, you know, do you conclude that something else is going on? I can see that being very frustrating.
Now, one of the things I did learn from this article is that there is a Google Maps status dashboard, of which I will put the link in the show notes later. And I keep forgetting. And I was just telling John my Bluetooth mouse. John had Bluetooth problems with his headset, and I have Bluetooth problems with my mouse, and it's still wonky. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I'll go back to my trackpad.
The status dashboard is a great idea, except every company I've ever seen, I know before their status dashboard. you know, the Xbox will be like this, and there'll be others where it's like, oh, things are just really weird tonight. Something's up, something's off. Is it my internet connection? Is it, you know, this or that? And then you're left for about 20 minutes going, I'm wondering what's happening. And then the status dashboard updates and says, yeah, we're having intermittent issues here and there. So I don't know what these dashboards read off of, but I suspect it's nothing automated. I suspect they're reading off of an engineer going in saying, yes, I'm acknowledging that there's downtime on this particular app or that there's an issue with this particular system.
Right, right. It's funny, you know, because it's... And sometimes it's more annoying than others. Like an Xbox going down, for most people at least, John, maybe you disagree, but for most people that would be considered an inconvenience and, you know, not a real problem. The other week we had a regional power outage where I am. And by regional, I mean, you know, it's part of the island. It's not like your regional where it's, you know, millions and millions of people are affected. We have thousands of people affected. And, and the electric company's outage map, which is usually pretty useful, was just useless. You know, it'd been down, power had been out for hours, and it wasn't showing squat. And so I tweeted at them, since I still had, I had no, you know, broadband, but I had wireless. And so I tweeted them, hey, when are you going to update your map, you know? It shows, you know, my area is up, but it's been down for hours. And they go, well, we're having a lot of outages. I know. And that's why I'm asking you to update so I know where power is available. But at any rate, I didn't say that part, but that's what I was thinking.
It's just always so interesting to me when you see these oddities. So, for example, when I was traveling on the super secret mission last week, I was in an area of northern Kentucky near Bowling Green that was a, you know, normal cell coverage, urban area. And I realized my LTE speeds were just horrible. They were just really, really bad. And I ran some speed tests. I was pulling, how's this for odd? I was pulling 1.7 megabits per second down on LTE and 24 up.
Wow, that is
so
odd.
So my upstream was great, but my downstream was horrible. By the next morning, it had gone back to 14 megabits per second down in this on this LTE connection. So It was just one of those random things where you're standing there, it's the middle of the evening on a Friday night, and you're going, why is LTE acting more like Edge? You know, it's not even acting like 3G. It's even like two generations back. That was a night that my wife and I timed it perfectly. We pulled into a hotel right as a snowstorm came through. So we were sleeping. The snowstorm passed through, and I just had to dig out 2.5 inches of snow off my car the next morning.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, I'll take that, especially since I was one of the lucky ones that remembered to dig out my snow brush beforehand, and it wasn't buried, you know, under a bunch of stuff in the trunk or anything like that. So,
yeah, I have a picture of my dad's car with, what, literally two feet of snow on it from, you know, overnight combination of snowfall and then, you know, winds just picking up snow and dumping it on his car. But
I'll tell you, Northern Kentucky is an interesting place for a late season snowfall, you know, mid-March. If you consider, you know, today is the first day of spring, so you consider mid-March to be kind of late season. You've got about half of the people there that are traveling to the south, so they're from the north and they know how to deal with northern weather. And then you've got another half that are from the south going up north for something, and they have no clue. So in a hotel parking lot, you see everything from me standing out there with a telescoping snow brush.
All right, and, you're ready.
my car is, you know, warming up and the defrosters are on and everything. You know, I'm ready to go in about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, to people standing around in T-shirt and shorts trying to figure out how to get snow off their pickup trucks. Which is a little bit harder for them. So yeah, it's an interesting world to be in when a snowstorm comes through.
Yeah. I still remember seeing newbies show up in Alaska and they'd never driven on ice. And I was a kid, so I didn't know how to drive, period. But, you know, I knew that there was a different way to drive on ice than not. And I'd see them spinning in an intersection, you know, stuff like that. But from a safe
distance. I saw one that I felt really bad for. His wheels, it looked like he was stuck in the snow, but he wasn't actually stuck in the snow.
Nope, we're losing you, John. Or I'm losing you.
So one wheel.
You keep on going. You're okay now, but you're dropping in and out.
Okay, No, I was saying, so this person, it looked like they were spinning their wheels in the snow. In reality, there was something wrong with their rear differential. So one of their wheels was spinning, but the other wheel on the same side was not spinning.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, that was even worse. That's just
That's just dangerous. I don't know. I don't have any, you know, and there's, like I said, there's a dashboard. I put a link in it, and it does, even today, it shows day by day, and it shows X's and directions API, distance matrix API. Oh, it has more than that. It has gaming services. A whole bunch of maps APIs were down. Any rate, so on-demand rides and delivery solutions were down, but other things were up. It doesn't say, it doesn't have it by geography, so I assume it's the whole thing. I don't know. I didn't, like I said, I didn't notice it. Did not notice it at all. Okay. Alrighty. Next up on our list is a cat. I don't know if I just found it fascinating. I saw it. A link appeared in my like Google News of, you know, things that might interest me, and it was an article about the best headphones for sleeping. And I didn't realize that was a category of things. I mean, these are specifically designed for sleeping, and they are not cheap. Let me see. I think they're like a couple, none of them are like under $200, and they're pretty well-known brands. You know, I think the Bose Sleep Buds 2 got the best of, it's $250. And, let's see, what else do we got here? They got a bunch of other stuff. Amazfit Zen Buds are $150. Okay. That's under 200. And Cocoon, K-O-K-O-O-N, Cocoon Night Buds are $200. So not cheap. Quieton 3 Sleep Earbuds, $270. Now that's it. That's it. So four of them. The thing I found interesting, well, A, that there's a category for this. And the other thing I found interesting is their wireless earbuds. So, you know, I can't keep wireless earbuds in my ears, which is why when I walk around, I use a cabled earbuds. So I don't know. It's an interesting idea, especially if you're, you know, back when I was traveling, I could have really used this, I think. Because I was in some, you know, hotels with some traffic outside, and it probably would have been nice to have some of this. I used to carry a I used to carry little wads. I forget what they're made for blocking out sound if you're in a noisy environment. And I used to use that to go to sleep. But interesting. Since you still travel, would you consider buying just specialized pair of earbuds?
I would, but you know, I've slept with my AirPods in before when I just wanted something, you know, to listen to or try to calm my mind down. What I want actually for this is more akin to selective earplugs. You know, the idea that you could wear something that would block out most of the noise that you don't want, but if someone is trying to talk to you in the morning, or someone's trying to wake you up,
a smoke alarm goes off.
Or a smoke alarm or something like that, it would let that through.
Right.
I think that could be a really cool AI intervention on this, but I did not know this was a category, and I don't really know if I would buy when things like AirPods Pro work just fine. And I guess the possibility is you might lose that in your bed. These are a little bit bigger, and they tend to, you know, be stuck in your ears a little bit more. But I don't know why you wouldn't just use your AirPods or your regular headphones. Why you would need the special sleeping headphones?
Yeah, I wouldn't. Well, I would use them because I know they'll fall out of my ear. They just fall out of my ears, you know, just like now. Maybe I put them in wrong. I don't know. But I don't mean to say they fall out of my ears every time I put them in. But if I'm not careful and I don't twist it the right way, they will fall out. Or if I just walk around. So I try not to walk around with AirPods Pro or any other wireless headset. Okay. Next up. As I said, I wanted to add Paul Lawler and I talked about the Apple announcements the other week. And we found them interesting, but there's nothing either of us are planning to buy. Although I did say the new iPad Air 5, I guess, is kind of interesting because it now supports Apple Pencil 2. And so next year after I'm retired and on a reduced fixed income, it would be a more affordable alternative if I need to replace my Pro. Although I'm now reading criticisms of the new iPad Air that it's kind of flimsy and it's, you know, the build quality is not quite up to snuff. So I haven't seen one. I haven't touched one. So I have, you know, no idea how accurate this is, or they're just fanboys getting a little jumpy over nothing. Mm-hmm. But so what did you find interesting, if anything, John?
Well, so I looked at the announcements and none of the products really spoke to me too much other than the Studio Display. and that's because I've been using Apple displays now for over a decade. My primary display at home is a 27-inch cinema display. I have another one at work. And I like the cinema displays. I especially liked them when I first got them because they were one plug, or actually three plugs that you plugged into your MacBook, and everything, you know, the MacBook would charge, and it was a very nice and streamlined system. Today, I have those three plugs plugged into a USB-C hub, and then that hub plugs into my MacBook. So if anything, I actually have a MacBook, an easier setup now where I just plug in one plug. The only issue that worries me is that Apple doesn't like certain things on their displays. And the one that I wish they had was a power button. And the reason I wish that is because the display I'm using right now as I record this podcast was dead for about a year, where I would plug it in and it just wouldn't power on. It refused. And there was no way to manually power it on because it's looking for a signal. And if it doesn't get that signal, it just doesn't turn on.
Right, right. And power saving mode.
Yeah, it was a power-saving mode that saved a lot of power because it wouldn't turn on at all. So I eventually took this display and thought, well, it's just toast. It's done. And because I'm lazy, I didn't throw it out. I boxed it up and I put it in my storage unit and figured I'll throw it out eventually. And then about 6 months later, I pulled it out and I thought, well, before I get rid of this thing, let me see if it works.
Right.
And lo and behold, it powered right up. It just needed like a six-month break.
And you didn't do anything physically to alter it?
No, pins. Not a thing.
Wow.
It has been running perfectly fine for the last 4 years. That was about 5 years ago that it did that. I went a year without it, or almost a year. And it's been working fine ever since. And I'll keep running it until it really dies. But now the other odd thing is these displays, like the one I'm working with, you can pick up on eBay, you know, they're for more in shipping than they actually are to cost. It'll be about $100 with shipping to get one of these. So then it's like, well, do I pay $1,500 for the Apple Cinema display?
Right, right.
I guess I'll get 4K or 5K. That'll be nice.
And warranty.
Warranty. Or do I just buy a $100 studio display from 2010 and plug in my USB-C hub and let it ride for another, you know, 5-10 years or however long it lasts until it decides to die on me? So.
by the way, you know, it's been so long since I bought a monitor. I don't know if you heard me mumble under my breath while you were talking. I think I said out loud, did you check the pins? And then I realized, wait a minute, Apple displays don't have pin inputs.
Yeah, no pins, nothing to check, no power buttons, nothing like that. And I do know that the cables, because they are Apple cables, they've started to become more frail over time.
Yeah.
And I've had to do a duct tape fix or electrical tape fix on one of them. Of course, now it's a little better now that they're just plugged into the hub all the time. Right. They never actually plug into – I'm never pulling them out. I'm just unplugging the hub. So,
right. You know, it's I have not bought an external – I'm not – oh, wait. Well, I have bought one external display. It's the 10-inch display. It's Prechen, P-R-E-C-H-E-N. It's a, like, I don't know. I've never heard of the brand. It's a 10-inch – it's really made for, like, security monitor panels. That you would stick up for like a home video, not home video, but a home, you know, like a door camera video display. Except I use it as my second monitor for whatever it is I'm using. Because it just, you know, it plugs into my USB-C hub. I think it's a HDMI. And it just works great. It's tiny. It doesn't take up a lot of space. It's the only monitor I've bought in 10 years. I don't know. Maybe more. In fact, that was my problem when I got my new Raspberry Pi 400, I said, "Oh, I'm gonna plug it in. I've, you know, a bunch of external monitors. All of them are DVI."
Yeah,
I needed.
Yeah, I had to pick up a little external display the last year. I picked up one from Asus, and I don't use it very often. But when I do need it, it's nice because it supports micro HDMI. It supports USB 3,
right.
Thunderbolt, so I can do that. And that is my. That is my backup if my Apple display does die anytime soon, because I could probably clear off a lot of space on my desk with going from one 27-inch display to dual monitors between my MacBook Pro's 13 and this other one that's a 15. For home use, I probably could get away with that. So we'll see. That's the other weird thing when you have a big monitor. It, you know, these cinema displays take up a lot more space than the Apple Studio display does now.
Yeah, and quite frankly, I'm never going to own an Apple display, because, or at least a new one, because I can't afford, what is it, $2,000 for the new Apple display?
The studio display is $1,599,
okay.
I believe.
Okay, that's close enough to $2,000 for me. It's about $1,000 more than I would consider paying for a display.
Well, you know, these cinema displays were $1,000 when I picked them up, but that was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So if you take that and divide it out, I'm paying $83 a year.
That's not bad.
So that's really not too bad. But I did not expect they were going to last this long. And like I said, one of the two didn't last this long. It's got a year less than its buddy that's in my office.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Speaking of things Apple and displays, I can't remember if it's alive with the latest updates or we got to wait another one. Universal Control, have you tried it yet, where you can use a mouse and keyboard with a iPad and a Mac at the same time? I have not tried it yet.
I've not tried it yet, but what I really am eager to do with it is when I get a new iPad Pro, which will probably be later this year. It'll probably be one that has the trackpad, keyboard, and all of that.
Oh, expensive.
That might be interesting. That might be interesting to play with next to my MacBook Pro and be able to interchangeably use the trackpads and the keyboards on either or. If Universal Control works the way it's supposed to, that would be a pretty killer display where you could just be working on one device and then move over to the other device and just interchangeably use the mice and keyboard.
Yeah, yeah, I find it kind of interesting myself. So maybe I'll try it. But it's tricky. Some of these things, like what was it? Oh. Some new features require very specific versions of iOS or iPad OS devices. For instance, spatial audio. Spatial audio works on my iPad Pro 2020. It does not work on my iPad Pro 2018, which is not that old when when spatial audio came out, and it doesn't work on the iPad mini. I think it does work on the iPad mini 6, but not the 4. And or the 5. It didn't work on the 5. So some of these new features are very fussy about which versions of physical entities they support versus, you know, versions of software. Okay, I've never heard of this. Data Jar?
Yeah. So I've been playing around with the Shortcuts app lately, and one of the apps that's a free app that I think if you do play with Shortcuts, you might want to know about is this app called Data Jar. Data Jar is simply a collection of, if you think about it as a programmer, global variables. Variables that you can call from any of your shortcuts. So it supports a lot of different data types. It supports lists of options, you know, the idea of a dictionary that you can do key pair lookups and all those things with. And it works across iOS and macOS. So your same data jar of data can go on either. So for example, I used to use, and this is a challenge I'm going to put out there to our fives of listeners, I used to use an app called Tally to track how many days I've worn contact lenses, because I change my lenses. I'm supposed to change them every 30 days, but I don't wear them every day. So it's, well, how many days has it been? So I had a little Tally button on my phone, and I would hit that, and it would increment by one. And I thought, well, I'm really, you know, this whole app is just for one particular Tally, and it supports multiple Tallies, and I could get rid of it. So what I did was I just built a little Siri shortcut where when I launch the shortcut, it asks me, it tells me the current count. It asks me if I want to increment it. If I say yes, it increments it. If I say no, it doesn't increment it. And when it reaches 30, it asks, do I want to reset it? So at that point, if I get the reset prompt, I know it's time to change my contact lenses. And if I say no, it just never does anything at that point. But the nice thing is the contact counts variable is accessible to all of my other shortcuts if I need it for anything. And it's also on my Mac as well as my iOS devices through Data Jar. So if I want to have a little report that, you know, say I was, you know, tracking a number of these little variables, like, you know, how many things have I done with this, or when was the last time I did this or that, I could track them all in Data Jar and then write a report that would pull all of them. So, yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, apparently, I'm looking at the datajar.app webpage, right? And it's like free, like no in-app purchases, no annual fee. Just free.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's the rare thing today. I mean, it's a very simple app, so it's something that you could imagine that they would have trouble, you know, charging for.
Yeah.
The developer does ask if you want to give a tip. You know, you can add a tip through in-app settings, but there are no, there is no requirement that you do that. So.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, and not that I'm encouraging him. I like to see people keep things up to date and have an incentive to do so. So I was just remembering back in the day, you know, when the iPhone first came out, the big thing that nobody else remembers anymore is that apps were like 99 cents or free.
Yeah.
And for 99 cents, you would go, sure, why not? You know, if it looked moderately interesting, 99 cents is not too much of a hurdle to jump over. You know, and then it would be like, well, if it were, you know, $20 or $30 and it looked moderately interesting, no. But for a buck, sure, why not? Yeah, so it does say integrated with Cloud Drive, included iCloud Drive, synchronized with iCloud. Free with the tip jar, I see what you mean. Pay a few bucks to support the developer. Offline support, pretty cool. You know, it's funny, John, as many times as you have explained how you use Apple Shortcuts so cleverly, I really still haven't done squat with it. You know, the only thing I did was to do something that Apple Music can't do, and that's sort my playlist. And I remember our buddy Sven Johansson, when I mentioned it to him, says, why in the world do you want your music playlists alphabetical? And the answer is just so I can see if I have any dupes in them, you know, or like not the exact same song. I think Apple will warn you if you're trying to add something to playlists that's already there. But if you have like, you know, some artists have like 3 or 4 versions of the same song that are ever so slightly different for whatever reason. Different, you know, greatest hits versus original album or remastered or whatever. So, you know, that helps me take a look at it. And that's why I have, That's the only shortcut I have that I made myself. And then, of course, you know, check order status. And the few times that I order something from Apple online. But like you, yeah, I'm looking forward to the... I'm really curious about the Mac Studio, the Ultra Mini. But way too expensive, and I have no need for it. The iPad Air 2022. That I find interesting, but I don't need one right now. And like you, I may hold out to see what the new iPad Pro looks like if they come out with one later this year.
True.
Yeah. Well, that's about all I have. That's got anything else, John?
No, just the, you know, I was got to use some apps while traveling that I never get to use. I mean, I use Waze, mm-hmm. which is built by Google as well. So similarly, it routed me around some traffic snafus.
Why do you use Waze instead of Google Maps? Why do you prefer that? Because I know other people who do that too.
The interface seems to work pretty well. I also like I don't think you can do this in Maps, but in Waze you can schedule drives in advance. So if I know I'm going to be going from place to place at various times, I can lay in those drives before I leave home, and then it'll remind me, okay, you need to leave by this time to get here, you need to leave by this time to get there, instead of sort of having to do the mental estimations in my head all the time.
You know what I need? And I don't know if it can be done via a shortcut or something else. Probably not. But I need a map that lets me specify when I actually need directions. And by that, I mean, sometimes I know how to get to somewhere except for the last mile. You know, it's the last mile problem, right? So I can get from town to town, and I know that's not a problem. But to get to a very specific address, I don't know where it is, where I don't know where to park. I just need the last mile, and I need you to be quiet until until I'm ready for it. And sometimes I need the first mile. Like, I have now parked at this unfamiliar location. I need to know a, you know, reasonable way to get out of here without, you know, going through all kinds of different turns and things. And so I need a first mile solution. And after I'm done out at first mile, I know where I'm going, and, you know, you can be quiet, and I'll do the rest. Just let me know if there's a traffic incident that I need to route around. So... that's a feature I have been really, really, really looking for, and I still don't know how to do it, but I would really appreciate it if somebody would develop that. That'd be great. I got to try Waze again. I think I stopped using Waze because it was so intrusive. You know, it wanted to do points, and it had other cars that wanted to talk, and it's like, I just need to go from here to there. I don't need to be socializing on Waze.
Yeah, it hasn't been too annoying for my wife and I. And also with Apple CarPlay, it's just really easy to use with CarPlay.
Nice.
And so that's part of the thing as well. After having CarPlay, I do not ever want to have a vehicle again that doesn't have CarPlay. Just because it makes it such an easier thing using my iPhone than the built-in infotainment systems in most cars.
Well, I have such an old car that I don't even have Bluetooth in it, nor do I have any kind of data input. I literally plug a FM transceiver into what used to be called a cigarette lighter. No longer light cigarettes. It's just I think they call it a power adapter or something. And that has a low power FM transceiver in it. That's how I listen to to music, and mostly audiobooks in my car. I rarely actually listen to music in the car anymore. Okay, that's about it. I don't think there's any new announcements coming out in the near future. Apple's done. Google's probably coming up pretty soon. And I don't know about Microsoft. I don't know what they're doing anymore. Nor do I care. I don't really care about Windows 11 anymore. So. So that is it. All right, John. Well, it was good to talk to you again. And again, thanks to Paul Lawler for sitting in last week as co-host. Always a lot of fun. And we will talk to you next time.